Good evening, everybody. It's 6:30, so I'll make a start. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this meeting of view and scrutiny tonight. I'm pleased to see that we have quite a lot of the members here. I was getting a bit worried that we had more experts than members, but we have maybe got them balanced out now a bit. Item one on the agenda is emergency evacuation. I'll go through it because we have visitors here. Either through the doors you came in or through the doors here is emergency evacuation and to assemble in the car park. And if you want water, well, you've got water in front of you. So, and the toilets are through in the front entrance. Apologies for absence. You. Item 3, minutes of the meeting held on the 21st of April 2006, which is on your in your agenda, pages 3 to 4. Could I have a I will propose these minutes. Could I have a seconder, please? Thank you. Okay. Urgent business. I have one item. I call it. I'm going to use it as urgent business here because it would be simpler to do it. A meeting has been called for the 8th of September of this committee of view and scrutiny to discuss the assets register. We've already had a look at once, so if you could please put that into your diaries, 8th of September.
What time is
that? It's 5. Sorry, I beg your pardon. It's 1700. Yes, sorry, beg your pardon. Thank you for that. Thank you. Okay. So, 5 o'clock. Yes, please. Is it? Anyway, if you could report at 5 o'clock on the 8th. Declarations of interest. Anybody has any interest? Declarations of interest on the items that we're going to discuss. Well, thank you. Okay, we'll make a start on this rather heavy pile of paper with item number 6, an update on the internal audit charter, which I believe, I've missed a trick here. I should have introduced the experts. I beg your pardon. So at this point, I'll go down the table, it'll make it easier. Max Thomas, head of internal audit, correct? Richard Smith, your assistant, and then the lady Rebecca Wadsworth, who is a senior auditor. In other words, she looks after these two. Okay. Then I go to KPMG, and it's Kath Goodall, and Rob Walker. Okay. Sorry about that. So at least you put a name to whoever's speaking. Okay. So we come to item 6, which is update on internal audit charter. And everybody's been given an extra sheet of the internal audit that was done in January. When was that?
I've emailed it about an hour ago.
Yeah, okay. It's an additional piece to that particular item. And Max, you're going to take us through this. Yes?
Chair, this is hopefully a fairly technical issue, but the global IIA, Institute of Internal Auditors, set standards for internal auditors, and periodically they update those standards, and the UK standard setters then have to adopt the changes set by the global IIA within the relevant standards for the UK, which are the public sector internal audit standards. And in turn, we just have to make sure that your audit charter reflects those changes. So the report tonight is asking the committee to approve some relatively minor changes to your audit charter. So unfortunately, the version that was in the pack didn't show the track changes. So hopefully the version that has been circulated in the last half hour so shows you what those changes are. They are relatively minor changes. They're really just the inclusion of a mission statement and a set of core principles. So that's the change that we're asking the committee to approve. The full charter is attached to the covering report, as Appendix 1. I'm happy to take any questions on that.
Are there any questions from anybody?
So the changes then are just the one paragraph in blue then, is it, under 3.2? 3.1.
The main changes are to paragraph 1.1, 3.1 and 3.2. Those are the main changes to the charter. Well, my recommendation to you is that you should approve these changes, because if you don't, then you'll no longer be complying with internal audit standards. So you'd actually be in a position where you're no longer conforming with the UK standards, which you would then have to declare. So it's just simpler to approve them, which is what I'm suggesting.
Chairman, I'd like to move the recommendation then on page 5 under item 2.
Thank you. Right, I've got it switched on. I'd also give the opportunity of actually giving you an update on the audit, which is currently ongoing. So we are in the moment, we're actually on site, and tomorrow is due to be our last day. So I can give you a brief update on that. I mean, just about the technical report, what it really just does is it gives some KPMG insights into what's happening in the sector and some of the issues that you may wish to consider. So, for example, it mentions about the new audit framework, and I notice you've got a paper within this actual meeting on that. And there's some other issues in terms of electoral rights and Modern Slavery Act that might have a local impact. But really, it's just for interest more than anything else, and for information. I'm certainly happy to take any questions that you might have on that document, but I won't propose to go through it in detail.
So is there any questions on that item? No? Okay, so everybody's quite happy to take that as information for them to be digested at your leisure. Okay? Thank you.
And Chair, if I can just give you a very brief update on the status of the audit. So. Yeah. As I said, we're about, tomorrow is our last on-site day of the main part of our external audit. there's a little bit more work to do in terms of things like whole of government accounts, which is a subsidiary part of the audit, and actually housing benefit as well, which will be a little bit later. But the main audit is largely completed. What I would say to the members is that there are no significant matters to report based upon the work we've done so far. The caveat is we haven't quite finished all the work. It hasn't been fully reviewed yet, but we have received good support. This is the first year we've done the audit here, and we've received good support, and I'm happy with the, from my perspective, it's been a good process and it's worked well. We'll obviously report to the next audit committee, which I think is due on the 21st, I think is the meeting where we would report to you our findings of the audit specifically, and we then go through the process of approving the accounts and issuing the audit opinion. Is that the correct date, Peter? I was thinking about the last time I was here, it was November the 5th, so I was still clearly had that in my mind. So that I just thought I'd give you an update on that, but I'm satisfied with the progress that's going on so far with the audit, and I would report any significant issues to you, but there are none. That's the message.
Thank you for that. Is anybody any comments to make? Okay. So now move on to item 8, which is internal audit annual report. And that's back to you, Max, again.
Thank you, Chair. This is my end of year report for 2015-16, and the purpose of the report is to provide you with an opinion on the overall effectiveness and adequacy of the framework of governance, risk management and control operating within the Council. I'm also required to make you aware of any significant control issues that I've asked the Council to consider for inclusion within the annual governance statement, which is later on this agenda. And you also need to be satisfied that the opinion, that you can place reliance on the opinion that I'm giving you, so I'm hopefully going to provide you with the evidence to demonstrate that. First of all, taking each part in turn, I am pleased to confirm that we did receive full cooperation from the Council in undertaking our work, and there were certainly no limitations placed on any of the audit work that we undertook. We completed all the planned work, and there is a summary of all the audits that we've completed in Appendix 1, which is on page 43. That also shows you the opinion for each of those audits and the date on which we reported the detailed findings to this committee. Based on the programme of internal audit work that we've completed, I'm pleased to say that I feel able to provide a reasonable assurance opinion. There's no qualifications to that opinion, and in forming the opinion, I've not placed reliance on any other assurance bodies. As you'll note from paragraph 13 on page 42, there are two issues which I asked the Council to consider for inclusion in the AGS, and those were in respect of the systems for payroll and risk management. Appendix 2 provides the details of the final reports that we've issued since the last meeting of this committee in April. Appendix 3 provides you with a quick update on a couple of the limited assurance audit reports that we reported to this committee earlier in the year. And just for completeness, Appendix 4 provides you with the definitions that we use for our audit work. So the opinions which are given for each of the audits, you can understand what those definitions mean. And then finally, in Appendix 5, I set out the quality assurance programme that we undertake. That has various elements. We have ongoing quality assurance for all our individual audit assignments, but we also complete a detailed self-assessment using a SIPFA checklist, and that makes sure that We are complying fully with the public sector internal audit standards. We also seek, we undertake a client satisfaction survey across all our clients, and we use the results of that to identify any areas that we may need to improve in terms of our approach to our work. And we also periodically are subject to an external assessment, and the last assessment was undertaken in April 14. And overall, I think on the basis of the of this programme that's in place, I believe that we are conforming to the public sector internal audit standards, and hence you should hopefully be able to place reliance on the individual audit work that we're doing, but also the overall opinion that I've provided to you tonight. And I'm very happy to take any questions on any part of that report.
Robert?
Thank you, Chairman. If we look at Appendix 2 on page 44, where we're talking about business continuity and disaster recovery, there doesn't seem to be any urgency somehow, I don't think, on updating those. I mean, it said arrangements are to be considered as part of the Council's Towards 2020 Efficiency Programme. Should there be a sense of urgency that those two items are addressed?
Well, obviously, I mean, we've identified some areas of improvement, and I suppose we do have to recognise that some of those improvements will take time. They're not things that can be sorted overnight. So, you know, we are comfortable with the sort of timescales that management have set out.
Janet?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. My issue was with page 44 and 45, particularly with the IT backup, because, as you see, we're all using electronic now, and areas for improvement, as you know, as you pointed out. And it says, however, the backups are not routinely tested to ensure that they would function correctly. You know, I mean, that's really quite deeply concerning. So I remember I have a hard drive backup, and it wasn't until I actually took it down, I thought, I wonder what it's been backing up all these years. I realised actually it wasn't very much. So if they're never tested, you know, what are we doing about this? Are you happy about that and the rate in which it's progressing?
Well, in terms of IT disaster recovery, the Council has got good plans in place, but you're right, those plans are only good if they work, and you need to have sort of regular testing. So, you know, ideally we would like that sorted as quickly as possible, but it's really for management to put the resources in to make sure that happens.
Anybody else? Any questions? Mike?
Yes, I've got a few questions. See, we're marked as reasonable assurance, and when I look at page 57 for the definitions, reasonable assurance seems to equate to barely adequate and just one above inept. It's not really a level to aspire to, but a level to move rapidly out of, because I see in 2014 and 15 we had substantial assurance. So in paragraph 13, I think I'm on page 42, hang on, let me check. Oh yeah, paragraph 13, where it says specific weaknesses in the control environment for payroll and risk management, under contract management on page 52, where it says there is no corporate monitoring of contracts, and there is no complete and up-to-date list of council contracts held within one register. So if we don't have a contract register and no corporate monitoring of contracts, aren't we in danger of contracts getting out of hand, i.e. not adhering to them or not fulfilling them?
Well, the simple answer is yes, that is clearly a risk. The issues that we would look to have included in the annual governance statement are significant issues which could adversely affect the ability of the Council to operate. Whilst those are, you are absolutely correct, those are control issues that need to be addressed by the Council, we don't believe that they're so significant that they do would warrant separately including in the annual governance statement. So we're not saying they're not important, we're just saying we're not recommending them for inclusion in the annual governance statement, that's all.
Right, so key issues and final reports, appendix 2 on page 46. It's fraud and corruption arrangements. That one says no opinion, which I thought was rather interesting for fraud and corruption arrangements. In the comments column, the areas for improvement where it says counter fraud and corruption strategy recognised as being out of date and updates being completed. Well, shouldn't strategies be updated before they expire, and when's this update due for completion? Any idea?
The issues which we've identified in that audit are actually hopefully going to be addressed later on the agenda. So the final three items on your agenda tonight cover updating the strategy, updating some of the policies, putting in place a risk assessment. So hopefully by the end of this evening we'll have addressed the issues that we've identified in that audit.
Yeah, on the next paragraph we've got code highlights the benefit of an annual fraud risk assessment. The council did not complete such a formal exercise in 2015-16, although this is part of the council's general risk management process. So why was this one not completed?
In doing the audit, we've identified some areas for improvement. Now, best practice says you should do a risk assessment, which it looks specifically at fraud and corruption risks. So that wasn't done by the council, although the council did have, it has got risk management arrangements in place that cover fraud risks. So in part, it was addressing best practice. It wasn't fully addressing best practice.
Sorry, these are going on a bit, but next para, on to page 47 now, where it says the need for robust up-to-date policies to cover key requirements of the SIPFA code is recognised by management, while all areas covered by existing council policies may have not been formally reviewed for some time. Why haven't they been reviewed for some time?
This is an audit looking at the council's arrangements. All we can do is report to you what we found. So what we found was that the policies were out of date, so there's not much more I can sort of add to that, really.
Is there anybody else who can answer that one?
Yeah, in effect, I believe SIPFA became aware that this was an issue across a lot of authorities nationally, and that's why they brought in the revised guidelines that they did on code of practice on counter fraud and corruption. They came out in 2014, and we are now we got internal audit to do an exercise to assess where we were in terms of that self-assessment, and as a result we're coming to committee tonight. We've gone through the self-assessment, we know where we've got weaknesses, and we hope to address those weaknesses with the reports that we bring in to members later on this agenda.
Thank you. Now then, the council, I'm just after that one on page 47, the council does not have an assurance compliance framework to provide confirmation all staff are aware of or have acknowledged responsibility for each policy. Again, why not? What's the point of annual appraisals? So, can we see an appraisal form?
I can't show you an appraisal form now. Something we can look into.
Right, next section, I'm up to payroll, so, yeah, 47. Payroll areas for improvement. Our payroll audit in 2014-15 identified no service level agreement with the City of York Council for the payroll service. We've now got an SLA, but still in draft. Why is this not complete, and when will it be? Whoever.
It's still in draft because we're making changes to the work that the service that City of York provide to us. We've got going down a self-service route for staff in terms of travel and subsistence and overtime claims, and that needs to be brought into the service level agreement. I hope that we will be rolling out that facility in the next couple of months, at which point we can look at updating the service level agreement.
So if we haven't actually got a service level agreement, then what criteria do we use to know this service is being effectively performed?
We do have a draft service level agreement that we are working to. We monitor the service that they provide. Obviously, it's a very important service in terms of payroll. So in terms of the financial side of things, finance monitor the payroll transactions closely. And from an HR point of view, obviously there's close relationship, working relationship between HR and City York payroll. So we in effect, although it's a draft SLA, we do work to that agreement for the services that are currently provided by York.
Right. God, it's a long document, this one, isn't it? Page 48 I'm up to now. Last paragraph. Oh, not the last paragraph. The last paragraph on payroll. Where it says there were also some other areas highlighted in the 2014-15 report where little or no action had been taken. What's this referring to, and why was no action taken?
I haven't got the information to hand. I don't know if you have, Rebecca. If we haven't got it, I can certainly let members have details of those items.
Right, page 51. We must be under risk management. Yeah, areas for improvement. Second paragraph. Many corporate risks show no evidence of being monitored or controlled and not ranked in order of priority. Service project and significant partnership risks all show a lack of evidence of monitoring or control. Could we have examples of which ones have been looked at, please?
Can I just clarify, are you asking for details of which risks internal audit have looked at as part of what they were doing, as part of the internal audit?
Yeah, pretty much so, because it says many corporate risks show no evidence of being monitored or controlled. So it's really a case of which ones were looked at, or were all of them looked at, and we've got all of them showing lack of evidence or monitoring or control.
Okay, I mean, looking at the report, there were we highlighted five risks where there was apparently little evidence of any change, and those were procurement, health and safety, data quality, data protection and member development.
Thank you. Right, page 51, I'm on to contract management, corporate arrangements now. Areas for improvement again. Wait a minute, am I on the other page? 52. Oh yeah, sorry, I'm on to page 52 now. There is no corporate monitoring of contracts. Well, this one's particularly disconcerting. So how is anyone aware of progress if nobody's monitoring contracts?
My understanding of the work you did was that the fact is we have no corporate central register that everybody can input to and update. We do have a contracts register of sorts. As internal audit have highlighted, not all contracts are on that, but what I would say is that generally they are monitored by the contract manager responsible for each contract. We are working to bring all these contracts into one register on Covalent, which is the performance management system we use for risk management and other items throughout the authority. So in the short term, I hope that we will have a risk register on Covalent, which will be updated by service unit managers as and when, and it will be there for us to report on both to management team and to this committee as appropriate.
Yeah, that's pretty much answered one of my next questions, where it says there's no complete and up-to-date list of council contracts held within one register, incomplete and out of date. Yeah, when have you any idea when it will be made complete and in date? Have we got a sort of timescale?
Is that one of the items that are on the report?
Yeah, it was
November. So we're looking at November 2016.
Right, where am I up to? There is no central repository. Where are we? I'm getting lost now. 53. Hang on a sec while I catch up with myself. I don't know if anybody can find it because I've lost this one, but it says we're in the same region. There's no central repository for contracts, and in some cases contract managers did not hold a copy of the contract they were managing. So I think it's a fairly similar answer to the previous one, but how does the system work? How does a contract manager manage a contract with no direct knowledge of the contract?
Obviously we hold contracts for all that. We hold copies of contracts for all our agreements. They tend to be held with the contract manager, or they tend to be held in the legal section. I'm not sure which contract managers we were talking about in this instance. We'll maybe need to look at that and come back to you with more information.
Right. I think I've caught up with myself. I still couldn't find where that was. Anyway, I'm on to page 53, HR sickness absence now. You'll be pleased to know I've only got half a page to go. Areas for improvement. Application of the absence management policy is not consistent across all service areas. So does that mean some staff are supported and others aren't? And can the auditor give some indication of what's happening with examples, please?
I'll need to come back to you in terms of the actual service areas we're talking about. I haven't got that information with me, but we can do that. But yeah, clearly there should be a consistent approach
across the council.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think a good proportion of this is not to do with the fact that it's not happening. It's to do with the fact that there was some inconsistency about whether return to work interviews, for example, should be done by the service manager and kept with the service manager, or whether that needed to then be passed on to HR. So I think it was more of a technical issue about who held the information rather than it not being done.
Okay, so that sounds like that one could be sorted out quite easily. Right, on to page 54. Return to work interviews are incomplete in some service areas. I wonder if this one's overlapping as well. So what impact does this have on staff employment, and rather more importantly, their future employment with redundancies in the offing?
Management team have reviewed this internal audit report. Return to work interviews may not have happened at the time of the audit, but they certainly do now in all instances, and we do regularly review that is taking place.
Good, so that sounds like that one's been addressed already. Now then, where was I? Page 54. It's also been several years since attendance management training has been provided. Why has this one been allowed to happen, and when was it last provided? Is it actually part of the induction process for new staff?
I'll need to get an answer from the HR manager for that one.
Now then, 54, payment card industry data security standard. In the last block, areas for improvement. The lack of progress has not been helped by the absence of an effective action plan. Why no action plan?
This area is my responsibility. Hands up, it's been down to having the time to do it. What I would say is that in terms of PCIDSS, the one thing we have done as an authority is we've made sure that we've minimised the risk of non-compliance by, in effect, all our card transactions go through a managed service through Capita. So the large responsibility for PCIDSS compliance is with Capita. So when people come to pay on our website, although it looks like it's going through our website, it's not. They're taken to the Capita managed service. I'm aware that I need to get on top of this, and I'm looking at this again in the next few months.
Thank you. Now then. Oh, yeah. Ooh, last one. The council does not currently have any procedure notes in place for processing payments. So how, therefore, are staff trained, and won't any errors of procedural faults just be perpetuated if that's the case? Or is that because it's going on to Capita?
Procedures were in place at the time for processing payments. They weren't specific about the requirements for PCIDSS compliance. They've now been sent out to all staff. So the procedures have been updated, and all staff who take payments now have the procedures in place with PCIDSS compliance.
Well, thank you very much. You'll be pleased to hear that that's my lot.
Can I just ask a question, Max? Is in most of the instances that have been highlighted, not all, I hasten to add, there is a management action agreed and a follow-up on most of them. Are you, as an audit unit, is that your requirement, or is that a requirement that has been agreed? I know it says it's agreed with you through the system, and are you happy, or is that in line with what would need to be done to cover not all but most of the issues that's been brought forward.
Okay, just to clarify, I mean our role is to undertake audits, identify issues if they exist, and to report those to management, but at the end of the day it's for management to decide what action, if any, they're going to take to address the issues that we've identified. What we aim to one of the main outcomes from an audit is for there to be an agreed action plan, because that's really what we're looking for. We're trying to help managers put in place effective controls, so we are looking for agreed actions. Clearly we would be highlighting to you where we thought managers were not taking issues seriously and were not putting in place action plans. That's not the case. We are getting full agreement in terms of what the issues are, and action plans are being agreed for all the audits that we're undertaking.
Thank you. Okay. Is there any other questions? So that this report is to be noted, it is to be voted on, it's to be noted. When is the next report on this particular issue to come forward before this meeting, before this committee?
We will present a regular report which summarises all the individual audits that we've done, and we'll do that through the year. We only produce one of these full reports once a year at this time.
Okay, so now can we move on to... Sorry?
Just in terms of voting, we're asking that members accept the opinion of their internal audit on adequacy.
Oh, sorry, I stand corrected here. We accept the opinion of the head of audit on the adequacy and the effectiveness of the authority's internal control environment. So I'm asking you now to vote whether you agree or disagree on that one, or accept or otherwise. Bearing in mind it's the internal auditor you're talking about this. Yeah, so can I have a mover and a seconder for that? Do I have a seconder? Thank you. So now can we put it to the vote, please? It's unanimous. Okay. Thank you. So now we're going to item 9, which is the annual governance statement. And Peter, you're going to take this one, yes?
Thank you, Chair. Under the Accounts and Audit Regulations, local authorities are required to review their governance arrangements, and particularly the systems of internal control and associated risks. So this annual review of governance arrangements demonstrates compliance with best practice, and it also allows us to review the effectiveness of systems and processes, largely linked to the previous agenda item. The AGS forms part of the Statement of Accounts and is subject to external audit as further assurance for members. And the Statement of Accounts will be presented to the September meeting of Audit Committee, as Rob's already highlighted. From 15-16, the Council is also required to comment on its counter-fraud arrangements within its AGS. And Veritel, as we've already discussed, has carried out an initial assessment of the Council's compliance against the CITFA Code of Practice on the management of fraud and corruption as part of its 15-16 audit plan. So officers are addressing the actions identified within the report, and those actions are summarised on the previous agenda item on pages 46 and 47, The three reports at the end of this agenda address a significant number of the actions identified, and they are the review and update of the current counter-fraud and corruption policy for approval by Council, development of a counter-fraud strategy and action plan, and production of an annual counter-fraud risk assessment. The AGS includes an action plan on pages 73 and 74 of the agenda. And as Max has already highlighted, we've picked up two items that internal audits have asked us to include within the annual equivalent statement, one around the control environment for risk and one around the control environment for payroll. We've also got an item which is brought forward from the previous AGS, which is a standing item, has been on for a number of years and focuses on cuts to resources and the impact on operational systems as we need to make further savings to balance our budget. Management team have also added a couple of other actions to the equation. Fourth item is concerned with the Council's response to ongoing funding reductions, and the final item is linked to the fraud risk assessment, which is the final item on the agenda. I'm happy to take any questions members may have.
Nobody has any questions? Yeah?
I'm afraid so. Right. On the actual page 65 executive summary, annual governance statement 2015-16 report, and the recommendation, we have a recommendation that members approve the annual governance statement for inclusion in the statement of accounts. But it just seems odd to me, where's this year's? Because we're looking at last year's. Am I just being stupid?
Again.
Yeah, the 15-16 annual governance statement is linked to the 15-16 statement of accounts, which is the both tie in. It's a look back at 15-16, which ties in with the statement of accounts 15-16.
Right, so under significant risks, where it says that's 4.1, the Council would not comply with the requirements of the Accounts and Audits Regulations 2015. If it failed to review its system of internal control, blah blah blah. So am I right in assuming that if we don't do it, we're not quite in control of the finances until we do? And is this not an essential management control system?
Well, in terms of reviewing its systems of internal control, we're doing it through an annual governance statement. Max has just done it as part of his annual report on the internal audit. And yes, if you didn't approve the annual governance statement, there would be an issue which I would need to discuss with external auditors. Rob's got a comment.
System of the whole system. Thank you very much. The whole system of internal control covers all the controls that operate through the year. So when we look at when we get assurance, say, from the payment system, there are authorisation controls that are going on all the time. The cash reconciliation, the bank reconciliation is going on all the time, and that's part of the whole system of controls. What I guess this does is it brings it all together at the end of the year to say, actually, during the year we had these things in place. So If we had any serious concerns over the control systems that support the accounts and the figures, and they would be saying something and saying, well, we don't think that figure's right because the control systems aren't working. So that it's all part of the overall assurance, yeah. If that's helpful.
Yeah. Then, page 71. Section 4, review of effectiveness, paragraph 3.
where it says a comprehensive review has been undertaken, blah, 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 following best practice, and an action plan schedule has been produced to ensure compliance, and a list of those officers having responsibility is available. Can we have a list of those officers, please?
The action plan's on page 73 and 74 of the agenda, and the responsible officer is against each of the items.
Right, thank you. The last paragraph, a plan to address weaknesses and ensure continuous improvement of the system is in place. What plan exactly is this, and can we have a copy of that, please? And how did last year's plan fail to ensure continuous improvement by falling back to barely adequate, or as it says here, reasonable assurance?
Councillor Park, can I just ask which paragraph you're referring to, please?
Yeah, it's right at the very end of paragraph 4, just before it goes on to para 5, internal control issues, where it says, we have been advised on the implications of blah-de-blah, and a plan to address weaknesses and ensure continuous improvement of the system is in place.
To me, in effect, there's two plans. There's the action plan, which is concerned with within this annual governance statement, and there's the agreed actions from the internal audit annual report. So they're the two plans that I'm referring to. Sorry, I think there was another part to your question, but I've...
Yeah, it's have we actually got a copy of those plans available to us? Is that in here?
Well, the plan's on page 73 and 74 for the
right.
AGS, and then the agreed actions are within the internal audit annual report, and it also within the quarterly reports that have been brought to committee in terms of the internal audits that have been finalised throughout the year.
Right. Yeah, and the last bit was just how come last year's plan failed to ensure that we had continuous improvement, as it said somewhere else, by the fact that we fell back to barely adequate. Oops, reasonable assurance.
In terms of the assurance between the 2 years, I think members need to be aware that although we do look at key financial systems, and if members look at the report, they'll see that key financial systems generally have high assurance or substantial assurance, that we do focus on different specific areas each year. So there's always the potential that the assurance will fall or rise depending on what areas we're looking at. We don't look at the same areas every year.
If I can add, in terms of drawing up the internal audit plan of work, we consult with managers, and because it's a risk-based plan, we inevitably look at the areas which managers already have got some worries or concerns about. So it's sort of perhaps understandable that we will then identify specific issues in those areas, because managers are already flagging them up as areas that we need to look at.
Right, yeah, well, that sounds good, because you should always concentrate on your weaknesses. I'd like to propose an amendment to the AGS for 2015-16, where... Hang on a minute. Where was I going to put this? Oh, yeah. I think... I can't find where I was going to put it now.
Sorry, I was waiting. I beg your pardon. I was waiting for this amendment before I was going to ask a question, but what we're doing here, in my assessment, and I could be wrong, is we're looking at reports put out by the various audit committees, etc. When you say you want an amendment, how can you amend a report from an outside body without asking for questions to be put? I can't see how we can amend a report.
Because
or is that what you're suggesting, that you should amend somebody's report?
No, this is the annual governance statement for 2015-16, which the...
Can you just enlighten everybody where that which part of the statement and where it is?
Yes. I'm about to do that. Hang on. So I'm just losing my pages now. Right. At the point where I was up to...
So which page?
Right, we're still on page 71. Well, I think I am. I might have got into the wrong bit now. No, I know where I was. Hang on. Just stand by one.
Chairman, there is a recommendation on page 65 that we approve the annual governance statement for inclusion in the statement of accounts. I would like to move that recommendation.
Right, I'm back where I was.
One moment, please.
Yep. I have got... Yeah, sorry, it was in the original document, presumably page 65. Recommendation 2.1, where it says it is recommended that members approve the annual governance statement for inclusion in the statements of accounts, and hang on, I've got too many bits of paper here. I'd like to put a target into the AGS. And a plan to address weaknesses with the aim to achieve a target of substantial assurance for the AGS 2016-17.
Can I say it? I can't really see that this is possible, because if we're always looking at weaknesses every year, then how can you guarantee that you're going to get substantial assurance, because you're actually looking at weaknesses?
Chairman, it doesn't seem as if you have a seconder for that amendment, so I've moved the recommendation, and I believe I have a seconder for that, Chairman.
Would you like me to address that particular point?
Chairman, we haven't a seconder for the amendment. The recommendation has been moved.
I haven't actually finished all my questions yet.
Sorry, I think at this point, I think we're getting a little bit off the mark. I think we've got to close this particular one down, and it has been closed and seconded, and I will put it to the vote.
I was under the impression that this was a scrutiny committee. Aren't we scrutinising these reports?
We are scrutinising the report.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do.
At this moment in time, I think we are We have been through them. You are now going
no,
backwards.
No, I haven't finished going through them. I've got two more questions. And particularly important ones, if I could just pop onto the annual government statement appendix, which is the action plan, which is the particularly important bit on page 73. And again, it says action plan for 2015-16, and yet it was only valid until April 16. So shouldn't this be an action plan for 2016-17, acting on the previous year? Or was this just a bit of a cut and paste bit? Because being the new boy, I might have missed this year's plan. When was it published? And when do we get the statement for 16-17?
We'll get it next year, as I would understand it. And
yeah, but this is an action plan.
And let me say that the target plans, you've got October 2016 on the two items that you've just talked about. Or am I wrong?
Well, on page 73, it's got action plan 2015 to 2016.
Yes, the status, and the target date is October 2016.
Status 15-16, target to finish in 16. Surely this is going through till next year to 1917. Anyway, so if that's the answer, control issue on the third paragraph down, third section down, the audit opinion of the internal control environment for the payroll process remains weak. There was no service level agreement last year, and there's still no service level agreement now, other than a draft. So how can this be monitored? If there's no service level agreement, how can anything be measured? Are we just working off the draft?
Well, as I read it here, the target date to complete that is October 2016. It says current position, initial meeting has been arranged. So, yes, they must be working off that particular draft at the moment, but if I read this correctly, it should be completed by, and not a draft anymore, by October 2016, or am I incorrect? I'm correct.
That's correct.
So in actual fact, the action plan is in position and is being acted on.
Lovely, thank you.
Thank you. So can we now... You'll be pleased to do that for us.
Thanks, Chair. For new members to the committee and for those that couldn't make the training we ran towards the end of last year, we're required under statute to produce a number of Treasury Management reports for members, as highlighted within paragraph 6.1 of this report. This is largely a result of the banking crisis and particularly the failure of a number of Icelandic banks, which at the time had large sums of local authority investments. So this report is the outturn report for 15-16. I'll keep this brief. The salient points for members, in terms of investments, the funding for lending scheme meant that investment rates remained depressed throughout the year, And we have seen some reductions in even the short-term borrowing rates. We were achieving 0.5%. Those rates have reduced as much as 0.3% over the year. However, we did achieve an investment return of £98,000 against an initial estimate of £59,000, and obviously that's because it's due to cash flows. We've held larger balances than we anticipated. The timing of borrowing, gross borrowing remained at £1.75 million during the year as part of the borrowing requirement for the A64 Bramblin Fields within the capital programme. We still need to borrow £320,000, and the timing of the borrowing will be dependent on other capital fund availability and prevailing borrowing rates. So Council will be asked to approve the annual prudential and treasury indicators contained within Annex B of the report on page 81 of the agenda as well. So I'm happy to take any questions, Chair.
As there's no any questions, I would ask that the committee note the Treasury report, and I would ask also for them to vote on it so that we are clear. Okay, so can all those sorry. Thank you. So now we come to Rob. Item 11, KPMG Local Authority Corporate Risk Register Analysis.
I'm working now, actually. Thank you, Chair. This is a piece of work we did nationally. So we are auditors for lots and lots of local councils. We asked them to give us all their risk registers, and we did an analysis. And this is the result of the result of that piece of work, which actually I carried out nationally. And it was simply a case of looking at everybody's risk registers and then doing a comparison. I have to say, as an auditor, I find things like that quite interesting. I know it's sad, but true. What it did actually. From my perspective, it was interesting that there was a lot of similarity between the registers we looked at, and that did in a sense provide assurance that it's kind of what you'd expect, actually. So that in a sense was intuitive. I just draw your attention to page 3, which I think is page 90 of the papers, where I just did a more detailed analysis of aspects of the most frequent risks we see across. And there were things actually that were, as I said, a lot of it was similar. A couple of areas that kind of you got at Rydale that we don't necessarily see elsewhere, which was a focus on affordable housing and customer expectations, which I found interesting. I've known the council for many years, and actually that didn't surprise me, given I know the area quite well because I live local. So those two things were interesting, and I think customer expectations are a big issue in local councils, given the cutting agenda that we are now seeing here and everywhere else. Also of interest was there were two things that I considered were interesting that weren't necessarily identified as really key risks. One was to do with general planning and development, because I'd had discussions on the Wentworth Street issue as part of, and I reported that back in the previous meeting I attended. So that was one area that I thought was interesting, but the whole point of it is it's a matter of interest just to think about perhaps for future as an organisation that's something that you might consider as a risk. But there isn't really a right or wrong answer here. It's more about having the systems in place to pick up things that are important, and it kind of complements the work that internal audit have done on the risk register. This is more about identification of risk rather than, I guess, monitoring it, separate issue, but it underpins how important perhaps these things are. Happy to take any questions on it.
Sorry, Janet.
I was just wondering if we did anything wildly different to any other authority, if there's anything jumped out and hit you in the face that we're doing differently to what other authorities are doing. And I just wondered if coming out of the EU was going to have any effect on that, whether it had been taken into consideration.
The piece of work was actually based upon last year's risk registers. It was a piece of work we did about 5 or 6 months ago in terms of pulling the information together. So, the impact of Brexit is hard to tell, but in the conversations we're having with all our organisations, it is very likely to have some impact. So, for example, some of my councils employ a number of European members of staff, which that may impact on them, but it really is too early to say. But I think it will do, yes.
Again, I'll be brief, Chair. This report's for members' information. It, as Rob's already pointed out, it was included within KPMG's technical update. What it does is it highlights the options for procuring external audit services in the future. The government have announced changes to the way that will operate. It's the view of officers that the council should participate in a sector-led approach to procurement for the reasons outlined within the report. And to flag really that a further report is likely in the autumn, which will require full council approval. Happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. This is part of a suite of reports that we're bringing this evening on the Council's counter-fraud arrangements. While the Council has generally good counter-fraud arrangements, it's been some time since policies were reviewed, and that's been referred to earlier on this evening. It's also recognised that there have been significant changes to the fraud landscape in the last few years, and there's a need to, therefore, review the policies and bring them up to date, and also to make sure that they are in line with current good practice. Peter referred to the CIPFA Code of Practice on Managing the Risks of Fraud and Corruption earlier, which was published in 2014. So the documents we're bringing tonight are in line with that latest guidance. In terms of this particular report, we're bringing two policies to the committee for recommendation for approval to Council. The first is an overarching counter-fraud policy, which sets out overall responsibilities for counter-fraud arrangements within the councils, arrangements for investigations, and also in the attached counter-fraud and corruption prosecution policy, the arrangements that the council will take if instances of fraud or corruption are found. The second policy on the in this paper is more specific, relating to money laundering and the council's arrangements for ensuring it counters the risks of money laundering. While the risks for local authorities in relation to money laundering are not massive, there is a responsibility under the legislation, the Proceeds of Crime Act and the money laundering regulations set quite broad responsibilities for organisations in relation to money laundering. So it's important that the council does have a policy in place and can recognise money laundering if it happens, and has arrangements for making appropriate reports if that's the case. I'm happy to take any questions on the detail of the policies.
Robert, sorry.
Can I assume, Chairman, that this is a national template that we're sort of opting into?
It's not a national template, but it's it takes into account all of the national guidance that's been issued.
I'm struggling a bit to work out where money laundering might come in, unless it's because I'm getting my money, that I'm paying my rates illegally. But is this for internal consumption, or does it include external fraud and external money laundering as well?
So the risks of money laundering for councils are actually quite low. The areas where you may tend to get risks are in the areas where you might get significant amounts of cash income coming into the council. So potentially areas like business rates. But it is a limited sort of range.
Any more questions? Sorry.
Thank you, Chairman. You talk about business rates as a possible area of possible concern. If rates are paid via the bank, isn't that their responsibility as well in terms of money laundering?
Absolutely. So we tend to be talking about large cash income, any sort of cash income to the council. Saying directly, but yes, obviously the banks have a clear responsibility and separate specific requirements under the Money Laundering Regulations and Proceeds of Crime Act as well.
Chairman, I'd like to move that we recommend to Council the approval of the updated counter-fraud and corruption policy and the anti-money laundering policy.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, again, as part of the arrangements for strengthening counter-fraud arrangements at the Council, this particular document sets out a strategy for moving the Council towards good practice arrangement in counter-fraud. So it tries to set out what the current position is, the areas or the issues that need to be addressed to make sure that we are fully in line with that best practice. And the key item is probably the action plan at the end of the document, which sets out the actions that are proposed. This should be a working document. The intention is that we will bring this to the committee annually for review. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions from anybody? Okay. Right, we now come to item 15, which is a exempt item. So, what do you tell me what I have to do here? We have to